And before we begin, the clock on the cases that are before us this morning, at least the first two cases, it's my understanding that there has been an agreement made about sharing time or combining time. Is that correct?
Yes, Madam Justice, there has been.
Okay. I don't know who, but I'm told that someone is going to be placing that agreement on the record. Is that correct, Ms. Clerk? Our petitioner?
Yes, I can do that.
Okay.
Mr. Canepa can correct me if I misstated.
I have no doubt that he will.
Good morning, Justices. My name is Matthew Kemner. I'm appearing on behalf of specially appearing defendant Fiege Gesellschaft mit beschränkter Haftung, I'll say GmbH from now on in that, and Fiege International GmbH. We have two cases, Amatin Chamani and La Paloma, that are both slotted for 30 minutes. At the trial court, they were argued as one, and then we submitted on the second one. We understood we have an hour, 30 plus 30 for the two. We understood from Ms. Cummings, with whom we spoke earlier, that the court didn't want to take a full hour and was willing to give us a little extra than a half an hour, though. I had proposed 20 minutes, with which I would say four reserve. Mr. Canepa was okay with that, but thought maybe 25. I'm fine with 20 or 25. I think that's the only thing, but if we would defer to the court's preference on that.
We were advised by our clerk that these cases could be combined, and I think that collectively we have agreed that 20-20 for each side is sufficient, but we are, I believe, in most cases ready, willing, and able to extend that should it appear necessary. However, that should not lead you to believe that you can just keep going. We sort of have a habit of letting you finish a thought or letting you finish a response to one of our questions. But beyond that, we'll try to keep it at 20 minutes each.
Very well. Then I'll begin. May it please the court. Plaintiff's entire theory of jurisdiction in this case relies on one thing. It relies on the imputation of contacts from U.S. companies, used to be called the Vanguard companies, then in October 2005, Fiege, a German company, Fiege GmbH, invested in those companies. The whole theory of their jurisdiction and Judge Johnson's order rests on imputing those contacts from the American companies to the sub. Now, why do I say that? There's a few things we can get rid of really quickly. Specific jurisdiction. Specific jurisdiction attaches when an act of the defendant has a cause that causes an injury in the product liability context with the product, that the product would cause an injury. There's the seminal case of Asahi, that's the Asian valve stem that ends up injuring someone in California. That product has to injure someone. We don't have that here. There's no serious argument from the plaintiffs that specific jurisdiction exists. The products at issue here are the old Vanguard plumbing components, what are sometimes called fittings, brass fittings or yellow brass. Those are the Vika Kansas products. We don't make those in Germany. The Amatin Chamani case that we're arguing right now is being tried, as a matter of fact, in Clark County. They're not defending any, the Kansas company is the defendant there. They're not defending any German products. They're only defending the Kansas products. So there is no suggestion anywhere in the record, and the plaintiffs don't contend otherwise, that plumbing products manufactured in Germany that made their way through the stream of commerce are involved in this. Quite the opposite. The shareholders of Fiege decided to invest in the Vanguard companies in October 2005, and it's only those products that are at issue in this case. So you can just forget about specific jurisdiction and set that aside. That leaves general jurisdiction. Now, general jurisdiction is a big hammer, so to say. When there is general jurisdiction over a company, it's very different from specific. Specific means you have jurisdiction over this party for this alleged wrongdoing in this case.
Before you leave the subject of specific jurisdiction, paragraph, as I understand it, paragraph 15 of plaintiff's complaint generally alleged the existence of an alter ego relationship between German company and the subsidiaries in the United States. It is not clear to me from this record what information was tendered to the trial judge to support the allegation. I wanted to hear from counsel about that point. But I would add that to the extent that it has been alleged and to the extent that the plaintiffs need discovery on the issue of alter ego, should not the trial judge afford them that opportunity on the question of specific jurisdiction?
All excellent questions. I think there's three in there. I don't think we need discovery, but I don't think there's any need for more discovery, but let me tell you why. On the specific jurisdiction, they have broadly alleged alter ego. They haven't brought any facts to support that, but on the allegation of alter ego, just from a logic standpoint, it still can't apply for specific jurisdiction. And why? Because of simple timing. Uncontroverted evidence in the record is that the products at issue down in Clark County right now were the Vega Kansas products. But we know that it can't be a contested fact because the Aventine-Tremonti facility, the condominium complex, was done by the time my client, the German company, even made the investment in Vega. And again, they could have done it a lot of different ways. They could have taken over the shareholder. They could have invested through the German corporation.
That was in January of 2007 when the
It was October of 2005 when the purchase occurred, and these were completed before. And remember, we're talking about plumbing components that have to be designed, manufactured, shipped from the manufacturer to the distributor to the plumbing store, and then to get into the plumbing fixture there. We're talking about some time that it runs through that. So there's no way that these could have been there. And in
part of the acquisition, though, is it the case that there was an assumption of liability?
Well, not by my client. That's an excellent question, because this case is going to turn on corporate separateness and corporate distinctions. Fiege Germany, the Fiege Germany companies did not acquire the Vanguard companies. Fiege Incorporated, which is a U.S. company, made the purchase. So there's the discovery on that point isn't really going to get you anything. The facts really aren't in.
So you're saying that the alter ego general allegation doesn't apply because the products involved predate the acquisitions?
Well, I put it a little differently. I would say that alter ego could apply, at least legally, theoretically, for the general jurisdiction theory. They think that as of the date they sued, there was an alter ego. And so at that date, you can disregard the corporate form.
I was focused on the question of specific jurisdiction.
But, yeah, specific jurisdiction, that horse is out of the barn. They didn't make the products. You know, if you were to invest in a company tomorrow and buy the stock, if that company did something wrong 2 years ago on specific jurisdiction, if you invested in it under U.S. law, Nevada law or Kansas law, and you observed all the corporate formalities and whatnot, you know, you may have a general jurisdiction problem because you didn't follow the rules of corporate separateness, but you're not going to get there with specific jurisdiction. So there's really, we're just going to be wasting time if we have discovery on specific jurisdiction.
So as to my question earlier on the question of specific jurisdiction, since the products were made, sold, delivered, the project completed prior to the acquisition, alter ego is not a viable basis for specific jurisdiction in this context.
Well, the key thing is that they weren't done by my client. And you know they couldn't have been done by my client because my client didn't even own them. But if it owned them and it was a separate, if it was made today even, my client is not making those. My client doesn't design them. My client doesn't warrant them. My client doesn't manufacture them. My client doesn't give warnings about how to use them. And they don't make the same products there. My client didn't make the design, and then they manufactured them in Kansas. It's really more or less almost like a passive investor with respect to the yellow brass products at issue in Kansas. Specific jurisdiction, or the yellow brass products now at issue in Clark County in Las Vegas. Even if it were today, there's no specific jurisdiction because we didn't make the product. We didn't put it into the stream of commerce. We didn't design it. We didn't warn it. And that really leads into one of the seminal cases about.
Can we return to my question about assumption of liability?
Uh-huh. Well, I mean, if, let's put it this way. If
let me phrase the question before you fire away.
All right.
It's my understanding that in the acquisition of the American company that made these fittings, there was an assumption of liability associated with that. Is that true?
Yes and no. No, with respect to my client. My client assumed no. The jury
is it yes with respect to the American company your client owns?
As far that's the allegation. I'm not. I don't think it's relevant.
Well, let's just stick with the allegation. I recognize that people want to reserve their right about such an overarching issue, but
I mean,
the allegation is that at the time that the American company was acquired by your client's subsidiary, or what became your client's subsidiary, part of that acquisition included the assumption of liability for any defects.
By Fiege Inc., the American company, not by the German company. That's the allegation.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So the allegation is it's got successor liability, essentially.
But they're not a non-party to this litigation. Fiege Inc. has successor liability. There's no allegation, though, that there's no proof on the record that the issue for you to decide is, like I said, the seminal question for this court is: can you impute the contacts of the Fiege U.S. companies to the Fiege German company?
But if I could just finish the point, I understood your client owns Fiege Inc.
That's correct.
If there is successor liability to Fiege Inc. and there is an alter ego claim between Fiege Inc. and your client, why is that not a basis for a specific jurisdiction, assuming that the facts could be developed to demonstrate that?
Well, I suppose, I would, the claim of specific jurisdiction still falls on the person who made the product or put it into the stream of commerce. Then if that
under the products liability statute, correct, but we have other cases where we recognize specific jurisdiction in the context of alter ego. If there is truly an alter ego, then you assess that at the time of the event that gives liability. So okay. It gets back to this question about successor liability is the reason I pose the question. Why wouldn't we, for example, examine the alter ego relationship at the time that the American company is acquired?
We would submit, Your Honor, with respect, it should be analyzed the following way.
Okay.
The question of whether there's specific jurisdiction attaches with what were the acts of the party. So whether there's specific jurisdiction, you have to ask yourself, did the Fiege German companies have anything to do with putting this into the stream of commerce? And that's clear. The answer is no. Now, down the line, separate and apart from jurisdiction, if there's a question that Fiege Inc. could be liable for something, and that then there may be liability through an alter ego theory later, then that's different. And I think with respect to the due process constitutional law issue of specific jurisdiction, it does not attach, because the cases are clear. It's the recent Nicastro decision by the U.S. Supreme Court. It's the seminal Asahi decision from the Supreme Court. All major specific jurisdiction cases are clear. In terms of specific jurisdiction, for it to attach, that there has to be that nexus between the wrongdoer and the person. And it makes sense in this case as well, because there must be we have two prongs here under jurisdiction. We have contacts, minimum contacts, minimum contacts must be reached. And then the second prong is reasonableness, what we sometimes call fair play and substantial justice. Now, the Volkswagen case made it clear, Woodson versus Worldwide Volkswagen, as well as Burger King, it is a violation of a constitutional due process right if the defendant doesn't have a reasonable expectation of being hailed into court for those wrongs. The Fiege companies, the Fiege German companies, when they made that investment, they have no claim of the sub to defend, not the manufacturing claim, not the warning claim, not design claim. They were completely uninvolved. And there's a broader policy argument here as well. What's fair? These are companies that they could have invested anywhere in the world. They could have invested in China. They could have invested in India. But they instead decided to invest in the United States of America in a Kansas company. So what do? They look at the law. How can you invest? They could buy it as sole proprietors. They could buy it with a German limited liability company, or they could use a U.S. liability company. And they did it, and they followed the law. The evidence is uncontroverted, and they don't contend otherwise, that they set up legitimate corporations. They have separate bank accounts. They have board. This is in Mr. Meyer's declaration. They follow all corporate requirements for the separate operation of these companies. It would be completely unfair for a company like FIGA, Germany, who relies on U.S. law, who follows all the rules because we want to encourage limited liability investment, to then say, well, we're going to ignore it. We also cite the U.S. Supreme Court case of Best Foods. Best Foods is where the United States Supreme Court, again, talked about, and that's a fairly recent case, as they did in Goodyear, the difference between parent and subsidiary. We get to the key point, though. The key point of this case, if you take everything out, there's no allegation of general jurisdiction against FIGA Germany for its own acts. FIGA Germany has no employees, no land, never paid taxes, has never entered any contracts, does no business. And the plaintiffs don't contend otherwise. The only hook is to try to say that the U.S. subsidiary, the acts of that U.S. subsidiary should be imputed. Now, the only way they can do that is, we contend, through a clear showing of alter ego. And that is not to say that they were interested in the sense of did they do general corporate oversight? Did they attend board meetings? Did they appoint board members? Did they have control for major financial decisions? The cases are clear on this. And that is, those are the cases of Best Foods, Hargrave, Doe v. Unocal, Hoffman LaRoche, Sonora Diamond. All of those cases are clear that normal corporate oversight will not allow an imputation of contacts. The contacts of the sub remain with the sub. It's basic corporate law. Now, Justice Ginsburg clarified this. Plaintiffs had a comment earlier where they said, look, well, they didn't really deal with imputation of conflicts at the end of the Goodyear decision. That's true. They didn't do the analysis. They didn't do the analysis because the plaintiffs in that case were too late to make the claim. But they did. The Supreme Court did let you know what the standard was going to be. And at the end of the last paragraph, and also in footnote 6, at the end of the Goodyear decision, what does Justice Ginsburg tell us, speaking for a united 9-0 unanimous Supreme Court, to impute the contacts from the subsidiary to the parent? We are talking about an analysis that is akin to the piercing the corporate veil under corporate law. It can't simply be these other lesser claims that other courts have done. You, the Nevada Supreme Court, got it right in MGM versus Disney. You said it's got to be overarching control of the day-to-day activities. It can't just be oversight. Big financial decisions, appointing board members and whatnot, you got it right in the MGM Disney case in 1991. You quoted Hargrave versus Fiberboard from the Fifth Circuit, and that is exactly the standard that Justice Ginsburg used for United Supreme Court in Goodyear last year. We would submit it's quite clear, even though.
So this is the reason I posed the question. We've taken a lot of time on this, but I believe Justice Ginsburg's point was, we focus on what is the alter ego relationship between the parties, if that's the standard.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is, do you examine that relationship in the case in which there's successor liability on the date of acquisition? And if so, what is there in this record to support a claim of the existence of an alter ego relationship when the American company was acquired by its alleged, by the German company's alleged alter ego?
The quick answer to your question, I'm running out of time, is there's nothing. In the judge's order, Judge Johnson's order, and all of this record, all there is general corporate oversight of major decisions. What is consistently termed by the U.S. Supreme Court as perfectly permissible conduct. It's just not there. That's the key question. You've asked the key question, and that's the answer. It's just not there. I'll reserve the rest of my time.
And, Mr. Cameron, just so that you know, I'm going to add right now 2 minutes to Mr. Canepa's time, which means that you will have an additional 2 minutes in rebuttal because we did pepper you with a significant number of questions.
Thank you, Madam Justice.
Morning, Justices. Before I start, was the clerk able to provide the justices with the copies of the exhibits?
Yes.
Thank you very much. Good morning. My name is Scott Canepa, and or may it please the court, my name is Scott Canepa, and I'm here today representing both the Aventine-Tremonte Homeowners Association and the 346 families that make up that condominium community, and the La Paloma Homeowners Association and the 160 families that make up that condominium association. We submit that the exercise of personal jurisdiction over the German VIGA entities comports with fair play and substantial justice because of their self-admitted exploitation of our local markets. This is a rare, if not unique, case because the German VIGA entities, by their own admission, on facts in the record, deliberately set out to conduct business in the United States and then bragged about their success in achieving that goal. To get straight to the point, Justices, the German VIGA entities, who today sit in court and tell you that they had nothing to do, essentially, with their American subsidiaries, and don't even characterize them as American subsidiaries, have stated publicly that not only do they own the plant in McPherson, Texas, but they run the plant and the operations in the United States, and that the employees in the United States are employees of the German company. So, to say this, based on these admissions, we believe it's both fair and reasonable that the German VIGA entities defend tort allegations by Nevada citizens in Nevada. They, in the evidence that I'm going to bring to your attention in the form of the exhibits, disregard their own subsidiaries. And for that reason, we think it's fair and reasonable that this court do the same thing in terms of exercising jurisdiction. I would point out that in listening to opposing counsel today, he used the word invest, stating that his clients invested in these United States companies. But interestingly enough, you won't see the word investment in the record, but maybe one or two times ever. Because one thing is for sure, the factual record in this case suggests that the German VIGA entities believe that they were in control of the United States operations, that they, the employees that worked in the United States worked for them, and that the plant in McPherson, Texas was just another one of their operational plants.
Mr. Canepa, how did Mr. Seeler describe the relationship between the Vega, however you pronounce that, subsidiary, and the German parent at the time that the American company was acquired?
Well, and I've actually had excerpts of his deposition testimony, but just to summarize it for you. Mr. Seeler, who was both general counsel and chief of staff for all of the U.S. companies, and also sat on the board of directors for those companies and the managing board of VIGA, Inc., described the relationship, or described VIGA, Inc., which is the first company, once you come onto U.S. soil, that's the first company they created was VIGA, Inc. And this is what he said about VIGA, Inc. He said that it has no operating structure, that it has no executive officers, and that it's never done any business in the United States. And in fact, he further testified in depositions in not only this case, but in other cases below, that the managing board of VIGA, Inc., the last company before you go to Europe, is not really ever consulted with. In other words, the communications go directly between VIGA LLC, which is the operating company that took over all of the assets of the Vanguard industry companies, including all of its employees, its plant, all of its facilities. It was a clear consolidation or merger You know, in fact, you know, we're litigating this case. He correctly points out we are in the middle of trial in this matter right now, in the Aventine matter right now in Department 22. And it's, although it's not part of the record, there have been rulings made by Judge Johnson in connection with our contention that there was a de facto merger. She, in fact, found that there was a de facto merger between the Vanguard entities and the Vega entities. But getting back to your question, Justice Hardesty, that entity, Mr. Seiler all but comes out and says that that entity is nothing but a shell because it's not used for any other purpose. It has no president, it has no vice president, it has no secretary. It exists on nothing but paper. Its offices are in the same location as the offices of the other U.S. companies. And what's important here is that the German Vega or Vanguard entities, however you want to characterize them, have conceded jurisdiction of all of the other U.S. companies that we have sued. They have not contested jurisdiction over those entities at all. And so get back to the question that you asked counsel, and that is, what evidence was there on the record, Justice Hardesty, on the day of acquisition by Vega Inc., which they claim is the nominal U.S. company that purchased the assets of Vanguard Industries? And the answer is that the German Vega entities were telling the world that that was their acquisition. They didn't treat, if you look at the record, and I could take you, probably the best way to describe this is to have you take a look at Exhibit A, which, by the way, is in the record at 568. Well, you've got the record there listed on the front of your sheet, so I don't know if I need to waste time to read that in. But in any event, this is important from this standpoint. This is Carl Heinz Meyer, who's giving an interview to a magazine called Indian Plumbing Today. This is a publication on the Indian subcontinent. And it's important that it's Mr. Meyer because Mr. Meyer is the person that they provided the affidavit from in opposition to the motion to dismiss for, or in support of the motion to dismiss for lack of personal jurisdiction. And I would just direct the court's attention to the second page of that exhibit, about two-thirds of the way down. I think I highlighted it for your ease of reference, where he says, in response to a question, the question being, kindly brief us about the global business in terms of the geographic reach for manufacturing divisions and potential markets, global market share, and the revenue of Vega. And make no mistake, even though in the reply papers they accuse us of filling in the blank, and any time there's a reference to Vega, we say it's the Germans when it's really the Americans. This article makes no mistake who they're talking to. This is Mr. Karl-Heinz Meyer of Vega GmbH. That's who the title is referenced to on the front of this article, and it'll become clear that's who they're talking about. And in response to that question, he says, having grown through the years in a traditional manner, four out of our five production plants are in Germany, and all of our export markets are served from there. Since 2005, Vega has also been operating in the USA. Plastic piping systems are produced here, especially for the American market, that Vega was able to successfully enter at the end of the 1990s. Now, what's important is if you go above that, I've highlighted the opening question from the interview, which says, since its establishment in 1899, Vega has been recognized as one of the leading manufacturers of plumbing and heating technology products. Please share with our readers a brief overview about the company, especially its significant milestones. And this is where it leaves no doubt that he's talking about the German company. And he responds, with roughly 2,800 employees, Vega is not only a worldwide leading manufacturer of sanitary and heating installation technology, but has also been a trendsetter in technology for decades. The company was established 110 years ago and is now being run by the fourth generation of the founding family. There are many milestones in the history, and I will attempt to name them and briefly explain it to you, and he goes on to talk about that. The point being that when they describe their American operations, they never use the word subsidiary. They never use the word our partner in the United States. And it's clear from this article that they know that there's a distinction. In fact, if you look at the affidavit of Mr. Meyer, it's clear that he understands the difference between corporate formalities and not. And so this is a classic example of legal hypocrisy in that there is
but whatever exploitation you charge Meyer of making about the German or about the acquisition of Vanguard, all of that post-dated the installation of the Vanguard products in your clients' homes, correct?
It post-dated the manufacturer installation of the fittings in the Aventine case clearly, because those were installed largely in 2000.
Is that true on both cases?
Well, I was going to say, that occurred. And in the other case, La Paloma, the acquisition occurred in October 2005, and La Paloma was largely constructed in late 2005 and 2006. So we can't state categorically that they weren't the owner of the company. But when you really look at it, because they just acquired the whole operation of Vanguard Industries, it would be like the conveyor belt going down with fittings on it, and all of a sudden, the instant that they became the new owners, those fittings became theirs.
Is there any allegation that Vanguard was plundered and all of its assets sent upstream in such a way that liability for the fittings would now be asserted against a company that's become a shell because it's been stripped?
No.
I don't see that in your papers.
No, that is not our contention.
Okay. So it's an advertising
It is their marketing statements to the world. It is their direct statements when discussing the plant, and that's the rest of the exhibits that I was going to go through for you. It is the admissions by Mr. Seeler, General Counsel and Chief of Staff.
And was that discovery that you asked the court to allow you to undertake in order to defend against the motion challenging jurisdiction?
The sequence of those events, Justice Pickering, are this. They filed their writ in early of 2012. We propounded jurisdictional discovery. Specifically, we set the deposition of Mr. Hans Meyer, and we propounded requests for production and 30B6 witness depositions, okay. And then they immediately moved this court for extraordinary relief in the form of a stay. And so we were precluded from conducting that discovery by the this court interposing a stay.
How did you come to take Mr. Seeler's deposition then?
Mr. Seeler's deposition was taken, well, it's been taken in many underlying cases.
Okay, so that may be from some other action?
Certainly the excerpts of the deposition, his deposition from this are from a case called Jasmine.
Okay.
I can't remember right now whether we took his
fair
deposition
enough,
in
fair
this
enough.
Case.
I was just curious on the scope of the discovery that was permitted,
right.
And you're saying very little.
That's correct. And I want to add one point, because it's a good point to discuss this, and that is they're advocating an alter ego test, and I listened to the colloquy between Justice Hardesty and opposing counsel on the alter ego test. If this court follows past precedent, the test here is one of agency, not alter ego, for the purposes of imputing jurisdiction.
You're relying on Trump on that?
Trump and also Hospital Corp of America.
Okay.
Which was the 96th opinion. And here's the difference between the two cases. Trump was two individuals where the court, for in personam jurisdiction purposes, imputed the jurisdiction of Mr. Trump's agent here over Mr. Trump defined jurisdiction. Hospital Corp of America was almost the identical circumstances we have in this case because it was corporations. And the court affirmed the finding of personal jurisdiction over a corporation on the basis of agency and specifically over right of control. And that circles back to the question regarding discovery. Because if you look at Exhibit I, which is Mr. Seeler's testimony, in, I believe that was the Jasmine matter, and you get down to the bottom of the page where I've highlighted for you, it says, what role did and does Vega International play with respect to the operations and management and control of Vega, Inc., the Delaware Corporation? Answer, there are limitations on the board of Vega, Inc. as to the requirements for I don't know whether approval is the right word, but we cannot take action in Vega, Inc. as a board of directors or as officers on six or seven items over and above a certain monetary amount without the approval or non-objection of Vega International. Question, what are those six items? Answer, I don't have them in front of me. And then he goes on to talk about it being largely financial. But the point of that is that there is apparently a writing where the European companies have imposed certain controls over. Now, we haven't been able to get that writing. I don't know that that writing would be dispositive, but what I would suggest to the court is But to the extent such a writing exists, and whether it's an operating agreement, whether it's a subsidiary agreement, I don't know what it is because he didn't identify it in his deposition. But if it was dispositive of these issues, they would have supplied it as an exhibit to their petition. So that assuming that this court were allow us were to rule that we have met our prima facie burden, which is the burden, as enunciated by Trump, that we met our prima facie burden, that there is jurisdiction here, but jurisdiction by imputation through agency, that we would conduct additional discovery, and that is some of the things that we would ask for ordinarily. And we would also, for example, want to take Mr. Meyer's deposition and confront him with some of the statements that he's made publicly on their internet. Going back to that article, one of the other things that I highlighted for you was he says at the bottom of it that it's very important to have a clear internet presence. And then if you go on through the other through the other excerpts that I've supplied for you, which go to the issues that I announced when I made my opening statements, my opening remarks, and that is that they treat the McPherson plant as their plant. They just considered another one of Vega GmbH's plants. Take a look, if you would, Justices, at Exhibit F, because I think this gives you a pretty clear idea of what it was that the underlying court, the district court, was looking at in terms of both the quantity and the quality of the evidence that we supplied that supports a finding of personal jurisdiction over these German companies. And this is a web page from, now this one is at the bottom, says Vega.net, and there is distinction to be drawn there. Vega GmbH has its own website. Its wholly owned subsidiary, which is a holding company, Vega International, which is the company that owns, ostensibly, all of its international operations, also has a website. Then its U.S. Vega entity, and by the way, you can't tell the difference between these by looking at the logo or looking at the name because they're all the same. All of them. They all use the exact same logo. They all say Vega. They don't make any attempt to distinguish themselves. And I know that's not dispositive jurisdiction, and I'm not suggesting that it is. But the point is, if you look at this, it says, Vega, a 110-year-old German company, currently employs 3,000 professionals worldwide, with approximately 500 in the United States. From humble beginnings, Vega has grown into an innovative global leader in plumbing and heating technology. Today, Vega manufactures, sells, and distributes more than 12,000 products for residential, commercial, and industrial applications.
So is it your position, like testing the outer limits of your argument, that that statement makes all of the Vega companies jurisdictionally present under a general jurisdiction theory in every state in the United States? Is that what your argument is?
I'm saying that the district court did not err in finding that there was general jurisdiction and specific jurisdiction over these two companies based upon their contacts with the state of Nevada and the pervasive control demonstrated.
So the control piece in addition to the marketing statements.
That's correct. That's okay. Correct.
And what's the evidence of control in this case? You read to us from Mr. Sieber's deposition where he couldn't recall the limits on what the board, I think it's Vega Inc.'s ability to commit to financial transactions is. Are there other indicia that you rely on of control in this record?
Yes, Justice Pickering. First of all would be the fact that they claim that the employees work for them. Second would be that they own the plant. Third would be that they operate the plant. If I had to describe control, I couldn't think of three better things. But beyond that, on this record, we also know that the European companies, the German Vega companies, control appointment of the Vega officers at Vega Inc., that Vega Inc. has no working structure, as mentioned before, that Vega LLC is actively managed, according to Mr. Seeler's testimony, is actively managed by Vega GmbH, not Vega Inc., that large financial decisions and others must be approved by GmbH. In fact, it's a little bit more in depth than that, because if you look at Exhibit I, the last page of Exhibit I, there's a colloquy regarding, that's not important, about these guys being cousins, the two founders of the company, or now the fourth generation of this company being brothers. And his answer is what's important. They are cousins. And he says, in talking about the Vigners, he says, well, I mean they review reports, you know, monthly reports. They, as we talked about, I mean, important decisions typically are sent to them and the board. It's a board in Germany, a managing board. I'm not talking about a governing board, but, you know, management people. You know, I mean, it's their ongoing reports and dialogue. The whole point of this is, from the perspective of what Judge Johnson did in reviewing the evidence, is I think that the order that she entered reflects the very real fact and the very real world fact that these German companies were disregarding their own American subsidiaries because she found, and she applied the Bauman 1 test, by the way, because I'm not sure Bauman 2 was citable as authority then. Mr. Kemner represents Daimler Chrysler in the Bauman case, and I think that at that point in time was not citable authority. But she employed the pervasive control test, which really isn't the test under Bauman 2. Under Bauman 2, it's right of control. And one way to show right of control is to show active control. Well, beyond the statements of Mr. Seiler, you've got the collateral facts, and it invites the question that, or it invites you to speculate about whether there's hypocrisy going on and whether or not, you know, they're engaging in vanity in the marketplace and then modesty in the courtroom. And in particular, I was...
Well, maybe what it invites is discovery with respect to the control question on Viega, Inc.
Without conceding that we haven't met our prima facie burden in this case, Justice Hardesty, I agree that we would have liked to have completed the discovery that we propounded on the German entities. I believe that based upon Mr. Seiler's statements that there are other documents out there that will reinforce the position that we have advanced in the district court, which caused her to deny the motion to dismiss for lack of personal jurisdiction.
Has there been discovery? Assuming that the judge indicated that you'd met the prima facie showing, has there since been discovery pursued on this question of jurisdiction? Because that would become a trial issue.
They have not. There has not. And that's because the Viga entities have taken the hardline position that the stay imposed by this court precluded any such discovery. In fact,
even for trial purposes.
I'm sorry?
Even for trial purposes.
Even for trial purposes. Okay. That's correct. In fact, there was even motions in limine that we argued in the underlying matter where they tried to preclude us from even referring to the German companies, which motion was denied because we couldn't make our case without referring to them for a whole host of reasons that may be later presented to you, but that I'm not free to get into because they're not part of this record. Very quickly, I would invite the court's attention to Exhibit B because I think a picture is worth a thousand words. And this is a picture that was taken from a snapshot from a Viga marketing video, which, by the way, has subsequently been taken. May I complete?
Of course, complete your thought.
Which has subsequently taken off of the internet by the Viga entities. But this, in their own words, depicts the vast worldwide network of companies that comprise Viga and the sphere of influence the Germans have over global operations from their perspective. I want you to notice where the big dot is because that's right over Germany. And then if you look to the far left, one of those dots lands right in our state because that's where Viga has established a distribution center in Reno, Nevada. Thank you, Justices.
Thank you, Mr. Canepa. Mr. Kemmer.
Thank you, Justices. Justice Hardesty, a quick answer to your question. I think there was a part I didn't get to answer. There's no evidence of alter ego relationship on the day of acquisition on that specific question. The only ownership is only evidence of that is ownership. There's no alter ego. Before that, the companies were competitors in the marketplace.
Follow me on this. I'm trying to clarify this. It gets a little complicated.
Right.
I may not understand what's going on. But my question was directed at... I read the Seiler deposition. I've read all this stuff, and my impression was that he's saying that the Viega Inc. entity is, in effect, a non-entity.
I think what it is more is a holding.
I'm not reaching a conclusion.
Yeah,
but that's what counsel and what the other side's arguing. So, if Viega Inc. is the acquiring company of Vanguard,
uh-huh.
then would you look at the relationship between Viega, Inc. and the German company on the date of acquisition where successor liability is the contention?
I think you could.
So whether the, under our jurisprudence, whether you're examining this subject in the context of an agency relationship, as suggested in one of our cases, or a alter ego relationship, as suggested in the Ninth Circuit and some other cases, the question would be, is Viega, Inc. an agent or an alter ego for the German company when it acquires a company that, as part of that acquisition, results in successor liability? That, to me, is the question of this case.
And I think we've, exactly. That's a good one. And we've, I think, explained in the record in our briefs, you can't be the agent. Here's the $64 issue. He said, look at the website. You say Viega does this, Viega does that. As he correctly admitted, never says Viega GmbH does this. There's three great cases I want to refer the justices to. First, there's the Hoffman-LaRoche case. It specifically deals with this question, I think, on 422. Hoffman-LaRoche is the Swiss pharmacy company, and they're trying to impute contacts in that. It doesn't matter if it's the website, which will look at the press releases or consolidated financial statements. It says quite clearly in there, use of the term we for LaRoche, for the big whole group of companies, use of the term the company doesn't mean you're fusing all those companies into one. You can also look at Calvert v. Huckins. Calvert v. Huckins says it's okay when you do financial statements to talk about the big company. It's called consolidated reporting. And as Calvert v. Huckins correctly points out, the IRS and the SEC both say it's fine. They're not getting confused. Now, can a layman get confused, perhaps, when they read a website? I don't know, but that's not the test. Goodyear. We, again, would urge you to look at not only the end of the Goodyear decision, but also footnote 6 at the Goodyear decision. It's really no different. In Goodyear, they all use the Goodyear name. There were three different Goodyear companies listed. And just because, you know, it doesn't say Goodyear, Ohio.
So indulge me, counsel. Assuming that the court agrees, or this panel agrees, that all of these indicia of imputed control are not germane to the question as suggested by Justice Ginsburg, but what is at issue is control under our test for alter ego or our test for agency, would not there be enough information from the Seeler deposition to at least require further discovery into the extent to which Viega, Inc. is either an agent or an alter ego of the German company?
I'm over time. If you'll allow me just a second, I can answer your question.
I'll plead your case with the presiding justice and ask that she let you do so.
You may complete your thought.
Please?
You may complete your thought, which is okay, the answer. Yes.
You don't need discovery.
To Justice Hardesty's question.
You don't need discovery, and here's why. Bill Seiler is his name. He was deposed on this very thing. And what did he say? He didn't just say there was some amount of control. He said on big financial issues, over $2.5 or $3 million, the shareholder can get involved. They do get to appoint board members. Those types of things. That is standard black letter, Best Foods, United States Supreme Court case law of what they can do. The facts aren't really in dispute. You need discovery to get more facts. Their facts are simple. And that is, you use Viega. That shows you're all one company. They have the shareholder takes a general oversight. You don't need to look. Bill Seiler already testified under oath what those were. Major decisions. If you want to settle a lawsuit for millions of dollars, if you want to sell land, if you want to run into a $4 million deal, the facts are there. You don't need more discovery to get the facts. All you need to do is apply the law. And the law is, you got it right, MGM versus Disney. You quoted Hardesty. And Justice Ginsburg last year said, yep, you got it right. And that is, do you have day-to-day control, excessive control of the day-to-day operations? Normal corporate management is fine. You can't impute the contracts of the context of the sub to the parent. There's no general jurisdiction here. Let the plaintiffs have their day in court down in Clark County. They got viable defendants. There's
That would be another question, so I'm going to ask you to conclude your comments now.
That's my question. There's viable defendants that with that down in Las Vegas defending now. With that, I'll conclude. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kendner. To all parties here today, thank you for your presentation. This matter will stand submitted. Court will be in recess until the call of the court. I believe our next case is not until 11:30.
All rise.